dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney. I'll be guiding you around the battlefield of the war of ideas today with three distinguished colleagues. Steve Malloy, author of Green Hell, will be giving us his appraisal of what's happening in Cancun. And I don't mean down on the beach. I mean what's going on in the climate change negotiations. Are we going to see the Obama administration pressing forward with an economy-killing deal in the pursuit of the will of the wisp effort to control climate change? Steve Malloy in segment two. Segment three, Christian Whiton, a former senior State Department official, will weigh in on the WikiLeaks caper, damage assessment, and what we should be doing about it. We'll also be pulsing Christian about the New START treaty and perhaps other things as well. And then finally, Bill Gertz, our cleanup batter for the week from the Washington Times, where he serves as the geopolitics editor, will be getting his inside the ring appraisal of the administration's efforts, even as they say there's no problem with missile defenses being compromised by their New START treaty. They're pursuing yet another one, a treaty that would absolutely confer upon the Russians, evidently, a veto over Americans being protected against ballistic missile attack. Well, that and much more with Bill Gertz in segment four. But first, some thoughts from me about the hearings that took place yesterday and that are underway as I'm speaking to you now in the Senate Armed Services Committee, reviewing the conclusions of a study conducted in the past 9 months or so by something called the Comprehensive Review Working Group at the direction of the Secretary of Defense. This is a group that was led by the General Counsel of the Pentagon and a senior combatant commander in Europe, and concluded that, well, most folks in uniform don't seem to think that there'll be real problems with bringing homosexuals into the military. Never mind that maybe as many as 30% think there will be serious problems, and some sort of view, it's kind of a majority rule thing, isn't it? So do we really need to worry about this? Well, I think there's plenty to worry about, and what's much more important is that the United States Senate has recently received a letter from one of the most distinguished military officers I've had the privilege of knowing. He is the 30th Commandant of the United States Marine Corps, now retired. His name is Carl Mundy, General Carl Mundy to you. He is a man of impeccable integrity who served his country with distinction for over three decades, rising through the ranks to be the Commandant of the Marine Corps, a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and interestingly enough, a man deeply involved in the deliberations back in 1993 that gave rise to the law that the Obama administration is now so determined to repeal that it is insisting in this lame duck session that the United States Senate overthrow a policy that has been actually in place going back to the founding of this country, but that has been codified since 1993, namely that avowed homosexuals may not serve in the United States Armed Forces. Now, in this letter, which I happen to have a copy of and I'm hoping to be able to share with all of you, General Mundy makes the observation that this law has nothing to do with don't ask, don't tell. He suggests that it may be a deliberate confusion that is being promoted by proponents of this repeal initiative to incessantly refer to it as don't ask, don't tell. But that term actually applies to a regulation that was adopted by the Pentagon at the direction of Bill Clinton after this law was enacted for the purpose of, well, subverting the law. So the law is enacted after 12 hearings in which General Mundy and his colleagues testify and make clear that there are real, legitimate, and abiding reasons why the United States military cannot be treated like just some engine for social experimentation without doing material harm to its ability to fight the nation's wars. Now, along came Bill Clinton and said, well, never mind that. Let's say when the Congress, as a result of those hearings, overwhelmingly on bipartisan bases on both sides of Capitol Hill, enacts a law saying no homosexuals may serve in the United States Armed Forces for the following 11 reasons, which are, by the way, folks, as valid today as ever they were. Bill Clinton says, well, never mind that. As long as we don't know they're homosexuals, homosexuals can go ahead and enlist like anybody else. And what that has come to be is don't ask, don't tell. The military was enjoined from asking in their enlistment forms whether an individual seeking to become part of the military was in fact homosexual. And homosexuals have subsequently, in some numbers, enlisted knowing that they were violating the law. Now, of late, Admiral Mike Mullen, notably the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as recently as yesterday, spoke in the Senate Armed Services Committee about his concern about the integrity. I think so did Bob Gates. The integrity of the armed forces, because there is this regulation in place that invites dishonesty and that encourages people, as long as the homosexual doesn't acknowledge their homosexuality, it invites others in the military to ignore the fact that there is an avowed homosexual, albeit not publicly avowed, in their ranks. And again, folks, this has nothing to do with how one feels about homosexuals. This has to do with the implications for the good order and discipline of the armed forces, particularly the combat units, which are the pointy end of the spear, as General Mundy puts it, being made less effective, having their cohesiveness adversely affected by having not only avowed homosexuals serving in their ranks publicly avowed, but doing so in a way that will be enforced by the radical homosexuals that are pushing this agenda, pursuant to what they call the zero tolerance approach, namely that anybody who stands in the way of the most aggressive implementation of this agenda will be drummed out of the service. General Mundy in his letter goes through item after item after item that raises real, legitimate concerns about going down this road, most especially going down this road under the circumstances that the Obama administration is so intent upon, namely having the United States Senate throw over the side this carefully considered, thoroughly debated, widely supported law from 17 years ago in favor of basically a lame duck Sessions hasty review of a study that most senators certainly haven't had a chance to even skim, let alone read. And these two hearings, yesterday and today, are simply inadequate to inform them about. So here we go again, folks. The Obama administration wanting the Senate to basically dispense with its constitutional responsibilities to serve as a thorough, deliberative body in favor of implementing a political agenda, one that, as General Carl Mundy points out, will be highly inimical to the good order and discipline and the military effectiveness of the armed forces of the United States. This must not happen. I hope you'll help us prevent it from doing so. Next up, we have Steve Malloy on Cancun. What the devil's going on there? Straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
This is the greatest country in the world. Every day, people in America live in 100% freedom. Our military allows us to do that. It's comforting to know that when American lives are lost in defense of our freedom, an organization like TAPS is there to help the friends and families of those who have died while serving our country.
TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. Visit us online at TAPS.org or call 1-800-959-TAPS.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, and joining us for this segment of Secure Freedom Radio is Stephen Malloy. He is the author of Green Hell, one of my favorite books on the subject of the climate change industry. Its subtitle is How Environmentalists Plan to Ruin Your Life and What You Can Do to Stop Them. He is the founder and publisher of JunkScience.com. He's a frequent guest at Fox News, and I'm happy to say, periodically here at Secure Freedom Radio. Steve, as always, it's great to have you with us.
Frank, thanks for having me.
Now, you are not in Cancun, Steve, as best I can tell. Tell us why that is, and if you can describe for us from this remote location, what is going on down there in the ongoing effort of the United Nations to fashion some sort of global relief against the mortal peril of climate change.
Right. Well, this year's annual UN global warming confab is in Cancun. Last year was in Copenhagen. And this year's meeting has just kind of been doomed by the failure of not only last year's meeting, but by the failure of cap and trade in this country. So what you have now in Cancun is a bunch of UN diplomats. I think there's been videos of them partying, because there's really not much for them to do. I guess the big issue, the one thing they would like to accomplish is they would like to make progress on getting money from the U.S. You know, last year, President Obama committed to up to $100 billion of aid, per climate aid, per year by 2020.
Now, say that again, Steve. How much money?
$100 billion from developed countries, not just the United States, but from developed countries.
Wow.
Needless to say, the United States would be a large part of that. That was his commitment last year. Now, you know, to be fair, Hillary Clinton backed off that almost immediately. She said, well, it's not clear how much of that is going to be new aid. We might just consider it, existing aid, climate aid.
Climate aid. So, but Steve, the larger question here, I guess, is there really is a cottage industry that has established itself now, in this environmentalist, scaremongering program. What is the current understanding of the science behind all of this? And do these, is that really what's come a cropper here? Not simply the failure to get consensuses of one kind or another in these fora or in the United States Congress,
right,
but that fundamentally the underpinnings of all of this have come a cropper.
Right. Well, you know, in my view, in the view of the climate skeptics, there's no evidence that man-made emissions of CO2 are harming the climate. On the other end of the spectrum, if you ask Al Gore, you'll get an entirely different answer. And I have to say right now, the skeptics are winning because global warming seems to be losing steam. Of the Republican Senate candidates that ran in November, 19 of the 20 were all climate change skeptics, which is quite a victory compared to what Republicans used to be on the subject. So, I don't think there is a debate about the science, but, people like Al Gore force the fact that there's a debate, but I think we're winning.
And when you say winning, I guess what this really is worth describing is, yes, what is it we are avoiding by having staved off, it would appear, at least for the time being, this pressure to engage in some kind of comprehensive effort to tax carbon or otherwise impose penalties on those who emit it?
Well, by staving off cap and trade, we have foisted off laws that would permanently cripple our economy by making energy more expensive. We would kill millions of jobs because it would be very difficult for manufacturers to, have facilities that don't emit carbon dioxide. So, of course, this will be yet another.
To say nothing of human beings who do a fair amount of emitting of this stuff, Stephen Malloy, as you know so well. But in that regard, is there some way of quantifying the impact that the various proposals and by the way, there are reports coming out of Cancun. I don't want to challenge your authority on the subject, but there are reports that the United States government is still trying to cobble together some kind of deal with the Chinese that would enable this enterprise, this industry, to continue to have some hope that it's going to produce something. But can you give us a sense of what the costs might actually be were this to eventuate?
Well, the only firm costs that have been estimated were for the Waxman-Markey bill that passed the House in June 2009. And what we're looking at is basically making energy cost $9 trillion more expensive between now and 2050.
I want you to make sure you spell this out. We were talking about $100 billion the last time as some sort of sop to these guys. You just said trillion. Is that right?
Yeah, nine trillion.
Nine trillion.
Yeah. Energy in the U.S. would cost $9 trillion more between 2012 and 2050. And that works out to about $3,000 per year per family of four.
Wow. And this is in the form of some kind of hidden tax, I take it, not something that would be expressly added to your IRS bill each year. But how would that actually be impacting the individual family?
Right. It would be a combination of higher energy prices, higher prices for all goods and services, higher taxes, inflation, the whole combination of factors.
Wow, a train wreck. Okay, Stephen Malloy, you have, of course, been noted as a skeptic on these things for some time. Is there evidence now that the kind of skepticism that you have been expressing about the very reality of this horrifying climate change scenario that most notably Al Gore and his fellow Nobel Prize winners at the UN have been promoting for years is really now increasingly seen by scientists, not just by a handful of them, but by large numbers of them as discredited?
Well, that's absolutely true. Just a couple years ago, the Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine put out a petition signed by more than 30,000 U.S. scientists, including 9,000 PhDs, that all expressed skepticism about global warming alarmism. And since then, more and more prominent scientists have been coming out. It's taken a lot of courage. You know, all the money in science today goes toward global warming alarmism. It's really kind of sucked the oxygen out of the scientific community. And, you know, the American universities are basically in the business of promoting alarmism.
And we've seen in the so-called ClimateGate scandal the emails indicating that there were deliberate efforts where skeptics did manage to come forth to suppress their publication in peer-reviewed journals and so on. All right, Stephen Malloy, in our closing minute or so with you, and again, Stephen Malloy is the driving force behind junkscience.org. It's a terrific vehicle for learning more about the nature of the issues we've just been talking about. Excuse me, junkscience.com. He is also the author of Green Hell, How Environmentalists Plan to Ruin Your Life and What You Can Do to Stop Them. Closing words on the United States Navy's chief climate change guy recently saying, hey, you know, this isn't a crisis. The sea level rising and so on is not something that is going to be an affliction overnight. Is that now evidence that the United States military, which has been recently engaged in all of this, is beginning to back away as well?
Well, I hope so. I mean, there's news out this week that the Navy seems to, as you said, they're not taking it as a crisis, but they still seem to be concerned about it. And, well, certainly changing sea level is something the Navy wants to be concerned about, but, you know, we ought to be concerned about it from sort of the right perspective. If you take Norfolk, for an example, which was a front page story in New York Times last Sunday, New York Times wants to paint Norfolk as a city that's sinking because of climate change. And in fact, Norfolk is, the sea level is rising in Norfolk because the land is sinking.
Well,
and it's sinking
a detail,
quite dramatically.
A detail perhaps for those of us who are concerned about these things, like the United States Navy's important facilities there. But I'm glad to see that this is something we'll have time to work on. Stephen Malloy, we'll have time, I hope, in the very near future to talk with you again. Thank you for this update from Cancun.
Thanks, Frank.
We'll look forward to hearing how it finally winds up. And keep your eye on these guys, would you? Next up, we've got our friend Christian Whiton talking about his department's secret cables being released by WikiLeaks. What's that about? Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Price check on aisle... ma'am?
Yeah.
Don't look down, but there's a giant python wrapped around your leg.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's probably nothing.
Nothing? Shouldn't I don't know, like, call someone?
No, I don't have the time. I'm late as it is. If it keeps up, I haven't looked at.
Are you sure? That's a pretty big snake.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. You're very sweet.
You wouldn't ignore this. So why ignore the signs of a stroke? If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. Call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Stephen and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Stephen a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
We're back. Secure Freedom Radio is joined by Christian Whiteon, one of our reasonably regular guests here, speaking to us about insights that he has from his time serving in the senior ranks of the State Department about the WikiLeaks drama, which has released something like a quarter of a million cables, some of them quite sensitive, emanating from the State Department itself, or posts of the United States government operated by the State Department around the world. And Christian, it is always good to have you with us, needless to say, but most especially at a moment like this, to think through sort of what the implications are of this kind of core dump of sensitive materials and what insights we may take away from them. So welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
Thanks, Frank. It's absolutely great to be here.
Okay, so my thesis on this, Christian, for what it's worth, is that this really represents an attack of a well, character that I guess I would call information warfare. Different from kinetic attacks, but perhaps in some respects at least as dangerous. And I'd welcome your thoughts as a former State Department insider on that.
Right. I think that's an important characteristic. Information warfare and political warfare, I think, is what this organization is up to. It's a foreign organization attempting to undermine our ability to make foreign policy, to defend America, to find partners in the world, and to change the policy of our elected leaders and our, you know, set forth by our Congress and people within the executive. So,
These are explicit ambitions. This is not something you're intuiting. This is actually what Julian Assange and his team are making known is their purpose, right?
That's right. I mean, very anti-war and anti-war individual. Mr. Assange likened the Guantanamo Bay detention facility to Auschwitz when he was speaking in, I believe, Oslo earlier this year. Also, the way it was released, they say in their possession 250,000 cables. They've been selectively releasing them for the most media impact, and they gave privileged early access to left-wing media organizations, Der Spiegel out of Hamburg, The Guardian, which is perhaps, you know, the most left mainstream one in London, and the New York Times here, and very close cooperation between those organizations. You'll see some things that were actually redacted on the WikiLeaks website's release of cables was found in New York Times in an unredacted form. So
really?
Clearly there's a lot of collusion going on there, and it's an attempt to influence our politics. So, you know, the thing I would encourage people to ask themselves is if this were run by a person named, say, Muhammad instead of Julian and located in the border areas of Pakistan instead of Northern Europe, if we would be reacting differently, and I think the answer is almost certainly yes.
Yeah, and just to pick up on that point, Christian Whiten, where you're, I think, really indicating that it could be very much in the interest of a guy named Mohammed operating out of the border areas of Pakistan to wage this kind of information warfare against us. So whether Julian Assange is actually in league with Al-Qaeda or other Sharia adherent Islamists bent on our destruction, he is certainly rendering a service to their cause.
That's right. I think you'd have to conclude that he wants us to lose the war in Afghanistan, wants us to, or certainly wants anyone who cooperated with us, even if it's just providing some blithe information in Iraq, to be at least neutralized, possibly killed, certainly ostracized. So certainly he's done more to help our opponents than any single suicide bomber or low-level Al-Qaeda operative. So, you know, the case that he's just interested in media transparency, I think, is obviously false, transparently false, if you will. And it leans towards that we should designate him as an enemy combatant. You know, I think if we looked at something like this in World War II or previous times, we would have concluded without any hesitation at all that this person is engaged in warfare, and we ought to as well in this instance, I'd say. Although, on the other hand, you could also take other routes. You could charge him with espionage. Certainly he's involved in a conspiracy related to that. But, of course, any of this would require some sort of decision out of the White House.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the enemy combatant is the way to go. Kill, capture seems to me to be a logical follow-on to it. We're speaking with Christian Whiten. He is presently a principal at DC International Advisory. He is a former U.S. State Department official from 2003 to 2009, including a stint as the special advisor to the Undersecretary of State for Global Affairs and as a special envoy. There is a lot to say on this subject, and Christian, I guess I just would like to wrap up our conversation about WikiLeaks and your damage assessment of this as an act of information warfare against the United States by trying to tease out what we may nonetheless have learned about some of the dangers that are present in this world well, frankly, I think most Americans have simply not been exposed to very much, notably during this most recent election.
Right. Yeah, it's funny. I find myself often as a critic of Secretary Clinton and of the Foreign Service as an institution. But in this case, I think the damage to both is less than meets the eye. I think in a lot of cases, you see our Foreign Service officers reacting well to a very complicated, you know, other diplomats, our politically appointed diplomats, reacting very well to a complex world. Two things that jumped out. First, with North Korea, it's important to understand that cables often just report information. If someone has a meeting at a foreign ministry, has a phone call, bumps into someone who's important, that will be cabled back to Washington, whether it's true or not, or whether it's believed to be true or not. So, for instance, when cables say that China is willing to part ways with its chief ally, North Korea, that's almost certainly false, and it's almost certainly misinformation that Beijing is placing with our foreign missions, knowing it'll be passed back to Washington, and it can fall to more senior and seasoned people in Washington to filter that out and to react hopefully to real intelligence as opposed to sort of misinformation. Other end of the spectrum with Iran, it's abundantly clear that this is not a U.S.-Israel problem exclusively, that everyone in the Gulf area, the broader Middle East, believes Iran is working on a nuclear weapons program. I mean, the only people in the world who seem to be fooled by Iranian propaganda is our Directorate of National Intelligence, who back in 07 said Iran wasn't working on a program. But everyone's worried about this. The Saudi king wanted Iran bombed. So clearly, this is a threat that there is a great deal of unanimity on, if you will, and the cables have shed light on that.
Yeah. You know, there's an interesting piece that ran in Haaretz in Israel, I think today, by Ari Shavit, who says in the headline, the WikiLeaks exposed the true Mideast conflict. And he talks about Julian Assange's dangerous, not merely because he's undermining the world order, but because he's shattered accepted dogma about the Middle East, namely that Israel is responsible for all of the problems and that the settlements are the single most important issue that has to be addressed, notably by getting Israel to capitulate. We're talking again with Christian Whiteon. And Christian, I think your point is so well taken here about the possibilities that we're getting insights into how the State Department is operating. My only criticism is that if we were seeing more of the kinds of work and the kinds of assessments that are coming out of these cables as the official public line of the State Department, rather than what seems to be fairly consistently a public line that is very much at odds with these more realistic assessments, the country would be better served. I don't know if you've got a comment on that, but I'd welcome it if you did.
Yeah, I think so. Now, the department has always had, having worked at the department on the seventh floor, especially trying to help dissidents in places like the Middle East and most particularly in East Asia, it's a hard task to do. You have a foreign service and an institution that's inclined to deal with the people who are in power, and not, the people who might be better in power and more partial to the cause of freedom, to the United States, to our allies, etc. So, couldn't agree more. And especially on the Middle East, you'll see, the sort of information coming from these cables or from other sources. And one other note, these cables are just up to the secret level, which is a big deal, but it's not the top secret or the SCI level where most high value intelligence would move around and, you know, very accurate information would move around.
Well, thank God for that. Thank God for that. Listen, speaking of this kind of diplomatic record, let me ask you about one that is being withheld from the United States Senate at the moment, namely the negotiating record of the negotiations, the diplomatic maneuvering and so on that went into the so-called New START Treaty. I know you've written quite critically about this treaty and I think share my concerns about it being pushed through as the administration would have it do in this lame duck session. But how reasonable is it, in your estimation, as a former diplomat in the State Department, Christian Whiteon, is it for the Senate to be able to see and to have the time to properly evaluate the negotiating record, which explains, I think, some of the places and aspects of this treaty that are not adequately understood?
Well, it's entirely reasonable, and I think, in fact, it would be derelict of the Senate not to insist on that before it moved to consideration, certainly before it passed. Something as important to this as important as a treaty, which, you know, when many foreign countries sign treaties, it sort of becomes a vague suggestion. When we sign it, it becomes our law and must be complied with. The sticking point is missile defense. I think a lot of Republicans in the Senate rightly believe that the administration sent signals that missile defense was, in fact, on the table, even though they were telling the Senate and everyone else that it was not. You know, there was missile defense was actually in the body of the treaty in Article 5, but also was throughout the preamble. And this is a big problem because it's sort of, you know, the thing that Ronald Reagan successfully resisted was trading away our advantage in defending ourselves from a ballistic missile attack in order to get some treaty that, you know, is a, frankly a great PR event, but doesn't make America safer, doesn't make Europe any safer if it were to be ratified. So
at the very best, it's a great PR event. I'm not even sure it qualifies for that. But Christian Whiten, as always, thank you for your insights into all of these things, and I hope you will get you back here very soon. We'll be talking more with Bill Gertz in a moment about this new START treaty and the missile defense components of it. But stay tuned for more of what you need to know to secure your freedom and that of those you love here at Secure Freedom Radio.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Ever since he was a radical college student, Barack Obama has fancied a world without nuclear weapons. Now, as president, he's made the realization of that vision U.S. policy. In fact, the only country in the world Barack Obama can denuclearize is ours. He seeks to do that through a new START treaty that would make deep cuts in America's nuclear deterrent, but won't have any comparable effect on any other nuclear power. He hopes the U.S. Senate won't notice that his treaty is unverifiable and restricts our anti-missile defenses, that Russia always cheats, and that our arsenal hasn't been upgraded in decades. Worse yet, he insists that this defective treaty be hastily rubber-stamped during the short post-election lame-duck session. If this sounds crazy to you, tell your senators to vote no on the new START treaty. This is no time to be disarming America.
Fire took place 3 years ago. There was a lightning strike. The winds picked up and the fire just took off. You're in shock. You don't know what you're feeling. You have nothing. I lost my home and 40 years worth of art. I never thought that I would need help from the Red Cross. They gave me emotional support to get up in the morning. I'll never forget what the Red Cross did for me.
Contact your local Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It's the cleanup batter position, and Bill Gertz is our duty batter. Always glad to have you with us, Bill, from the Washington Times, where he serves as the geopolitics editor and the author of the superb Inside the Ring column in the Washington Times. Bill is a regular guest of ours here, and there's a lot to cover, including several pieces that you had inside the ring this week, Bill. But I'd like to start with something we were just talking about with Christian Whiten before you joined us, namely a story that you broke earlier in the week about the missile defense negotiations that the Obama administration is evidently engaged in, even as it is trying to assure the United States Senate, many members of whom are quite properly skeptical about what it's up to, that they've really not got anything in mind in terms of limiting further our missile defense capabilities. Give us the story.
Sure. Yeah, this is a story that drove the liberal elite arms control community to distraction. But basically, I got a hold of a internal State Department report which showed, contrary to public statements by both Secretary of State Clinton and Defense Secretary Gates back in June, that there was in fact a secret draft agreement on missile defense presented to the Russians, and this had been an issue with a number of at least nine Republican senators who had been asking about this agreement and were told that no agreement existed. Well, in fact, it did. And there are very serious concerns that this agreement, which is being negotiated in secret will contain, if not explicit, at least implicit constraints on our missile defense systems down the road. Now, the administration insists there's no limits, but they also argue that the Russian threat to withdraw from the START Treaty is not a constraint, but clearly any that would be naive in the extreme to think that any policymaker thinking about expanding our missile defense would be limited from doing so because of that threat.
Yeah. Well, all the more reason, as we talked about with Christian again before you joined us, for them to get the negotiating record on the present treaty, but also on the treaty that they're in the process of negotiating now before they take up the START Treaty. And it is, I believe, in part, folks, precisely for that kind of reason that the administration is trying to drive the Senate into a hasty confirmation or approval of this treaty. So, Bill Gertz, thank you for giving us a heads up and hopefully vital information the Senate might not otherwise have. On the Senate side, let me stick with that for 1 second more. You've got two items in Inside the Ring. This is obviously an ongoing story, and I spoke about it in the monologue earlier, namely the extent to which there is reason to believe the so-called don't ask, don't tell policy, namely really the law, were it to be repealed, banning homosexuals from serving in the military, would have quite significant and negative impact on the military. What can you tell us about that, Bill Gertz?
Sure. Most of the mainstream media has been focusing on some a couple of data points that support their view that somehow that lifting the ban won't have any impact, when in fact the most striking disclosure is that 60% of the combat soldiers, those in the front lines, believe that allowing open gays to be in the military will hurt the military, and this is a huge problem. There are data points in there which show that it will have an extremely negative effect, one of which will be large numbers of troops will leave the military. That is being glossed over by, you know, most of the mainstream press in covering the story.
Yeah, it's just a scandal, because you'd think if the Defense Department is doing anything, it is trying to ensure the future combat effectiveness of the armed forces. And as you say, their own survey indicates there's a problem here. And to hear Admiral Mullen and others, the Secretary of Defense, sort of glossing over it, as well as the mainstream media enabling that, is scandalous. Bill Gertz, again, a place where you provide a vital service at the Washington Times in helping penetrate this kind of gloss. Two other items that I'd want to make sure we spend at least a minute or two on. One, a riveting revelation, which leads the Inside the Ring column Thursday in the Washington Times, Bill Gertz, namely that we've got a problem at the National Security Agency, the so-called NSA. What's that about?
A lot of the press accounts last summer kind of ridiculed the Russian spy ring that was uncovered that involved 10 illegals or deep cover agents who were exposed and deported rather quickly so that they couldn't reveal a lot of the embarrassing recruitments they had made, including among some Democratic Party fundraisers. Now it turns out that the National Security Agency is conducting a major mole hunt. That is, they believe that based on the investigation of those 10 illegals, they were servicing or communicating with a deep cover spy within the premier intelligence gathering agency of the U.S. government, NSA. By far, the most significant and most important intelligence we get comes from electronic eavesdropping and code breaking, which NSA does. And they're looking for a Russian agent inside there, along with the FBI. And perhaps they're searching other intelligence components, perhaps the Defense Intelligence Agency as well. This is a big story.
Well, Bill, this is actually a stunning story, because what you've indicated, both in your remarks now and in your report yesterday, was that the spy ring that was broken up and, as you say, hastily deported might have been able to shed light on the nature of this problem had the Obama administration not been so determined to make sure that these folks became unavailable for that kind of debriefing. This is another example, folks, of the kind of behavior that really raises serious questions as to the conduct of our government when it comes to trying to make sure that we get all of the relevant information, whether it's from terrorists or whether it's from spies or from others, before giving them Miranda rights or making them otherwise unavailable to our intelligence interrogators. Bill Gertz, this is worrying too, obviously, because the where this trail ultimately may lead could be further penetration and compromise of our intelligence agencies, and we know you'll be covering this closely, and we'll follow it with you. I want to catch your other story that's of considerable note here, especially against the backdrop of the WikiLeaks insights into the double game that China and so many of these other countries are playing. Tell us about your story on the Chinese role in Kyrgyzstan and its implications for the Afghan campaign and our interests more generally.
Yes, this is a very significant disclosure. Now, nobody's condoning the leak. They've caused damage, but from a news perspective, it's exposing some of the negative, nefarious behavior of China. You know, the U.S. government has insisted for years now that the Chinese were, quote, cooperating with the U.S. in the war on terrorism. A cable from the State Department sent from Bishkek, the capital of Kyrgyzstan, shows a meeting between the U.S. ambassador who confronted China's ambassador about an offer from China to the Kyrgyz government of $3 billion to close the strategic U.S. airbase called Manas. And when the ambassador confronted the Chinese, he began sputtering and lost the ability to speak Russian and basically didn't deny it. And then when he was pressed further, he snapped back at the U.S. ambassador, claiming that China was trying to close the base there because the United States had sent a group of Chinese Uyghurs from Guantanamo to Germany instead of sending them back to China. So this really exposes the anti-U.S. bias of the Chinese Communist government.
Yeah, and just to put a fine point on it, they were bribing a foreign government with billions of dollars for the purposes of disabling a critical component of our resupply effort in the Afghan campaign. Bill Gertz, as we talked about with Christian Whiten before you joined us, this is the kind of double game we're seeing in a lot of places around the world. And I think the fact that the State Department isn't being more honest about reporting to the public about these nefarious activities, maybe not in all of their details, but certainly showing us a more honest picture of what we're up against with these so-called fair weather friends at best is a disservice to all of us. And thanks to your efforts, Bill, we're able to penetrate some of the obscurants here, and we really appreciate you joining us each week here at Secure Freedom Radio. We'll look forward to talking with you, among other things, next week in an important conference up in New York on the media and national security. We'll be giving you more reports on that next week. But until then, please join us again for Secure Freedom Radio, same time, same station, next week. And until then, have a great weekend. This is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.